Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Brattle, Judge Reyes, Judge Bryan, the Honorable Diane B. Brattle presiding.
Good morning. Let's all be seated.
For the record, this is February 19th, 2020, the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Welcome to everyone in the courtroom this morning. I see that counsel for our first matter are sitting at counsel table. This court has got six matters on its calendar for today. Three of those are oral and three are non-oral. I also see that we have a student group joining us today, and welcome. We are glad to have you in the courtroom. I know that you are well-schooled in the rules of decorum, and we look forward to, at the end of our third argument, we'll have a question and answer session with the student group. But until then, we want to turn our attention to the matter at hand. So I will ask the marshal to call the first case. All right. And counsel for appellant, how are we doing with saying the defendant's name and or appellant's name? Okay, very good. So counsel, I'll just make a few quick remarks. And if you, attorney for appellant, if you want to assume the podium, you certainly may do that. I know that you're sophisticated, well aware that lectern is adjustable. Please take the time to do it. Make sure the microphone is positioned and the height of the lectern is what you want it to be, as well as your materials around you. We look forward to our conversation with you today. I'll just remind you, one thing, please identify yourself for the record as well as the client you represent before you start your remarks. With that, counsel for appellant, go right ahead.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Jenna Yauk Erickson. I'm an assistant state public defender here this morning representing the appellant, Ms. Angelie Nadeau. Ms. Nadeau has raised four issues for this court's consideration that primarily deal with the lack of sufficient evidence for her convictions for aiding and abetting the first-degree aggravated robbery of Tyler Bell and for aiding and abetting the third-degree assault of Robert Villanueva. Turning immediately to the robbery, Your Honors, Ms. Nadeau cannot be guilty of aiding and abetting a robbery because no robbery occurred. This is shown on the video played for the jury at trial. Ms. Bell discarded her backpack on the ground and ran toward the rest of the group. No one, not Ms. Nadeau, not any of her accomplices, forcibly took the bag from Ms. Bell's possession. For that reason, one of the elements of robbery is missing. There was—
Well, as I understand the law on robbery, the robbery may involve a forceful taking, but it also may involve a threat of force. And at least there have been a number of cases where property is taken, say, in a series of events involving force, either a show of force, like a weapon, or physical force, and that if the property is taken in that context, that's also sufficient.
I think I understand, Your Honor. So certainly the robbery statute says there can be force or there can be threat of force. There's no mistake. There was force used against Ms. Bell throughout this encounter by multiple persons. What we need for a robbery is the same person, the principal in the robbery, has to do the force or the threat of force and the taking. So the state's theory at
trial— Well, we do have Ms. Bell saying, testifying, that Ms. Nadeau hit her.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah. And then we have Ms. Nadeau testifying that she took the backpack.
Yes.
Right.
Indeed.
And we also have Ms. Nadeau's testimony saying that she took the backpack because she thought it belonged to Ms. Batchelor, who was also on the bus. But of course, you know, that isn't, the state offered other evidence that that backpack didn't belong to Ms. Batchelor.
No question, Your Honor. Okay. I agree with all of those facts. The problem is the state prosecuted Ms. Nadeau as an accomplice, not as the principal. The state's very clear theory at trial is that Ms. Batchelor committed this robbery. Ms. Batchelor took the bag, and my client helped. Ms. Nadeau helped.
Well, I was responding. I appreciate there's a difference between accomplice and principal liability. I just was responding to your comment that the state has to show that the same person exerted force and took the property.
Yes.
If that is what the state needed to show, it seems that there are those pieces of evidence in place.
I disagree, Your Honor.
Okay, help me out there.
Why? Yes, certainly.
Yeah.
So I want to be clear. I don't believe this court can affirm Ms. Nadeau's conviction on the theory that she was the principal. That is not what happened at trial. That's not the way this case is charged.
No, I thought that was your argument. I wasn't suggesting that was the state's theory or that was the conviction.
Okay, right. So let's back up.
Yeah, so go ahead.
No problem.
Yep.
So what are the options for this court if you want to affirm Ms. Nadeau's conviction for aiding and abetting the robbery?
Well, again, it's not about us wanting to do anything, right? I mean, sufficiency of the evidence is a legal test of the state's case, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. So what are the grounds on which this court might affirm the conviction? One is that, as the state argued at trial, Ms. Batchelor committed the robbery entirely, completely herself, and Ms. Nadeau aided. There are no facts to support that. We know that because Ms. Batchelor did not take the bag. She didn't do one element. She was not herself the principal in the robbery. And I don't understand the state to make that argument on appeal. Number two, this court could find, hypothetically, that some other person was the principal in the robbery. And again, as she's charged, Ms. Nadeau was an accomplice. There is no other person that could fit that bill. There was no argument by the state below that, for instance, one of the male DB or Mr. Billups committed a robbery and Ms. Nadeau aided it. And I don't understand respondent to make that argument on appeal. There is no principal in this robbery because there was no robbery. There's an assault and a theft.
But I think that argument is a little circular when you say that. Why isn't there a third option to say that Ms. Nadeau assisted because she's the one who took the bag and gave it to the principal? Why wouldn't that be aiding and abetting? Because then the principal is the one who ultimately had the backpack.
So in order for there to be a robbery, Your Honor, the principal has to take the backpack. That's what robbery says. There has to be force and there has to be a taking committed by the same person. Ms. Nadeau committed a theft. I don't dispute
that.
But
you're saying that I think there was the example given in closing argument about a bank robbery where you have the getaway driver.
Yes.
Who doesn't go into the bank to take anything, but is still clearly a part of this crime.
Certainly.
So that person isn't the principal.
Agreed. So in order for that person, the classic example of an accomplice, getaway driver in a bank robbery, there has to be a bank robbery. There has to be someone who goes into the bank and, I don't know the elements of bank robbery, but say they use a gun and they take money and they leave. Then there's accomplice liability because a bank robbery has been committed. There is a principal.
But let's separate the two legal arguments, the first being that the principal has to do both parts, and the second being whether or not a forcible taking even occurred because the backpack is dropped on the ground. If we separate those two out, and I'm just looking at the first.
Yes.
And I'm wondering if you're now saying that example is a bad example, given your statement that the principal has to do both the force and the taking.
I don't think so, Your Honor. If I'm understanding you correctly, I believe that the getaway driver in the bank robbery is an accomplice, as long as a bank robbery was committed. The test for Ms. Nadeau here, of course, we all know the aiding and abetting standard, is whether she intentionally aided, knew a crime was being committed, and intended to aid it. But one of the ways we instruct the jury, one of the standard jury instructions, is the crime has to be completed. And the crime has to be completed by someone, by the principal. The state has never identified on appeal who that person is. And to the extent their argument, which I'm not sure if this is it, but to the extent their argument is Ms. Nadeau is the principal, you cannot affirm on those grounds. The jury was not instructed
to find. If you have two people, one exerting force, one taking the wallet or the purse, you're saying neither one is guilty of aggravated robbery?
No. I mean, I think we would probably need more facts, but you have an assault and you have a theft. I think if you look at the language used by the state to describe Ms. Nadeau's actions here, they're very telling. So in closing argument to the jury and on appeal, the state consistently describes Ms. Nadeau's actions as theft. In closing argument to the jury, the prosecutor stands there and says she committed the theft portion. She completed the theft. She did the theft part. She's guilty of a theft. I don't dispute that. The state didn't prosecute her for theft. They could have chosen to, but instead they prosecuted for aiding and abetting the aggravated robbery. You can't have one person commit a theft and another person engage in assault and together call that a robbery.
Is there a case that says what you're saying, that you can't ever aid and abet a robbery if the principal doesn't do both? For example, if you're the one doing the force, the other person's the one taking the wallet, is there a case that says that can't ever be aiding and abetting for either of them, the aggravated robbery?
No, Your Honor, but I also don't think there's a case that says you can. This is implicit in the accomplice liability statute, right? And the accomplice liability case law from this court and the Supreme Court, which says You're only guilty as an accomplice, as the helper. If someone completes the crime, there has to be a completed crime.
So one of the arguments the prosecutor made in closing was that Ms. Batchelor yelled at Ms. Nadeau. So Ms. Batchelor's beating on Ms. Bell outside the bus.
Yes.
And that at about that time, Ms. Batchelor yelled, and this may or may not be supported by the evidence, but the argument was made. And maybe it was abandoned on appeal, and we can talk about that later. But that the prosecutor argued to the jury that Ms. Batchelor yelled, "Get our," or "the," or some article there, "get our shit," or "get our stuff," something like that. And Ms. Nadeau saw the bag on the floor, on the ground, meaning saw Ms. Bell's bag, and grabbed it and then handed it to somebody else. Mm-hmm. So isn't that theory, you know, if the case law supports it, you're telling me it doesn't, but if the case law would allow Ms. Batchelor to not only exert the force but give directions to take the property and Ms. Nadeau to then execute, wouldn't she be an accomplice?
So I have two responses, one legal and one factual. Legally, no. If Ms. Batchelor is the principal in the robbery, she has to do the taking.
So what case do you rely on for that? Because we have got a number of cases where groups of three do things, and it's very unclear who did what,
sure,
and their conviction as an accomplice has been upheld on appeal.
I don't dispute that, Your Honor.
Okay. You just think it's wrong?
I do. Justice Paul Anderson liked to say sufficiency cases don't make the law.
Okay.
Jury instruction cases make the law, arguably. Okay. Cases with statutory interpretation make the law. Mm-hmm. I don't dispute that this court, probably the Supreme Court, had affirmed convictions on similar facts. They didn't ask this question. And it is now incumbent on this court to answer this question. Factually, and this is important, there is no evidence in the record to indicate the time at which Ms. Nadeau picked up the bag. It's not on the video. None of this.
No, the video stops. Yes.
It does. Mm-hmm. So what does that mean for our purposes? It means there is no evidence. There is no way this.
Well, that's where I disagree with you, because there's testimony. The video stops, but there's testimony.
There's testimony that she took the bag, period.
Yeah, it's testimony by Ms. Nadeau.
Absolutely.
And she says she took it because someone told her.
And you know on the video that the either get her shit or get our shit, that statement happens 5 seconds after Ms. Bell is forcibly pulled off the bus.
True.
So if you look at the timestamps, you have a force and you have a direction from the same person, the principal, if we're going to adopt that view of things, separated by 5 seconds. And if wouldn't that make then Ms. Nadeau an accomplice if her own testimony is, I took the bag after that direction was given?
No. Perhaps it's helpful to think about the robbery statute and force, mm-hmm, and what that means. So robbery in Minnesota is a specific intent crime. The force has to be used for a specific purpose or one of two specific purposes. So what the robbery statute says, and case law corroborates this, the force has to be used to compel acquiescence or overcome resistance. To the taking and carrying away, you have to use the force to get away with the stuff or to get the stuff. That does not happen here. There's force. There's assault. All four of these people committed assaults, and there's a theft.
So including Ms. Batchelor?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
And she's, to be clear, convicted and sentenced for an assault.
Right. So
yes,
she engaged in assault herself.
No doubt.
And two people, one, Ms. Nadeau, took the bag, gave it to a friend, and then put it in Ms. Batchelor's stroller.
Yes, I believe.
So Ms. Batchelor is the one who ultimately had possession and took the bag.
We don't know much about which woman put the bag where, but certainly someone in this, Ms. Nadeau picks up the bag, and
Ms. Nadeau testified that she gave the backpack to her friend, who then placed it in Ms. Batchelor's stroller.
My point is that I don't know who that woman is. That's
well, Ms. Nadeau said she knew her. She was pretty clear.
We have no name of that person, Your Honor, is my point. The woman, the interim woman who takes the bag and
that
puts it in the stroller.
Yeah,
I agree. It's irrelevant.
It's irrelevant to our. Yeah. I want to come back to a question that's been asked a couple times now, I think, by both of my fellow judges here. What case law is there that states that Ms. Batchelor has to do the taking? And when I say taking, what I'm hearing from you is it sounds like you're saying she is the one who actually has to grab the one who herself grabs the bag. What case law says that? Because that would seem to, if that's the way we're going to interpret the case law, that it seems to me that anybody could escape liability for aiding and abetting by handing it off to somebody else, and all of a sudden they're scot-free.
I disagree, Your Honor. Mm-hmm. So at the highest level of generality, the state has two theories of liability under which it can prosecute someone. It can prosecute someone as a principal. It can prosecute multiple persons as a principal. In doing so, the state has to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that person, that defendant, did all the elements. The state can also choose to prosecute a person as an accomplice. But the idea of accomplice liability is the getaway driver. That's the person who helps.
Well, that's the seminal example.
Yes.
But why wouldn't that apply to this example? I don't understand how somebody can escape liability as an accomplice when they're aiding and abetting. They're actually physically aiding and abetting somebody taking somebody else's property.
Well, so there's two questions, right? One is whether Ms. Nadeau intentionally aided, and we can talk about that and the sufficiency and the facts that show her aid or don't show her not intent to aid. She's got to aid someone.
I mean, if you look at the standard jury instruction that was given here, mm-hmm. I'm not sure that supports what you're saying. It says, first, the defendant knew others were going to commit or were committing.
Yes.
Second, the defendant intended her actions to aid the commission.
Yes.
That does not exclude the aider or abettor from being able to satisfy one of the elements of the crime. If her act aiding the commission of the crime is an element of the crime, that doesn't mean she's no longer an aider or abettor. So even that standard instruction, to me, suggests that you can have two different people, one doing the taking, one doing the force, and both be aiding and abetting each other in the commission of the offense.
With the court's permission, I will respond, although my time has expired.
Go right ahead.
Thank you. I disagree. So one of the other standard jury instructions, which was read to Ms. Nadeau's jury and is read every day in the state of Minnesota, is think of it as an element or not. In order for there to be accomplice liability, there has to be a completed crime by the principal, by someone else, right? I disagree that you can have two persons' actions and join them together to make one crime. In your hypothetical, you have assaults and you have thefts. The force are assaults, the taking is a theft. You do not combine them together to get a single robbery. It's only a robbery if the principal, one person, commits every element, and you can have assistance. You can have aiders and abettors. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, counsel. And you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Good morning. May it please the court and counsel. My name is Nicole Cornell. I'm an assistant Hennepin County attorney on behalf of the respondent, the state of Minnesota. And Your Honors, based on your questions this morning to the appellant, I don't have much to add. It seems like this court understands primarily a respondent's arguments in this case, but I would like to point out the standard of review here is sufficiency of the evidence. And in light of the jury's verdict and viewing the circumstances proved as a whole, there is no conclusion inconsistent with guilt in this case for either aiding and abetting the aggravated robbery of Tyler Bell or aiding and abetting the assault of Mr. Villanueva.
In your brief that is filed to the court, you refer to the incident that supports the robbery, the taking of the backpack. You say that Ms. Bell dropped the backpack. And you say it several times, not just once. So if Ms. Bell drops the backpack, on what basis does this court affirm a robbery conviction for a forceful taking?
And Your Honor, if I assume Your Honors have viewed the video. The video takes place in just a few seconds, although the fight lasts approximately 5 minutes. So Your Honor, it doesn't matter whether or not the backpack was dropped or whether the backpack was sort of torn off the back. Those few seconds, it is difficult to see.
Well, your brief does say, though, it dropped, right? I mean, I just want to be clear.
I admit that, yes.
Yeah, it does.
However,
right?
But in this instance, that has no effect on the legal analysis here.
Because okay, so how do we affirm a forceful taking if Ms. Bell drops? Because what the video shows is she drops the backpack
and then takes off running.
For the same.
And at that point, she's no longer being assaulted by Ms. Batchelor.
If I could take mm-hmm. a step back, yep. Your Honor, it does appear that there is force and there is a taking, and two different people are doing that at various times during this entire brawl. So, right,
but the statute says, and I think on this point Ms. Yauch's correct, that in order to have a robbery, you have to either, one, use force to overcome resistance to carry away property, or use force to compel acquiescence in carrying away property. So you have to use force in the carrying away of property in one of those two ways. So I guess to rephrase Judge Ratvold's question slightly, which are you saying occurred here, overcoming resistance or compelling acquiescence, and then how or what force are you saying was exerted in carrying that backpack away?
Your Honor, the violence in this case compelled acquiescence. She couldn't, the victim in this case, Ms. Bell, couldn't have the backpack on her and go aid her partner, apparently. She also couldn't protect herself with the backpack on her back. So, Your Honor, it has to do with...
So which is, let me break those into two things. Which type are you saying? Is it overcoming resistance or compelling acquiescence? The force used here. It has to be one of those two.
Well, Your Honor, the facts satisfy both.
Okay. And so what is the force that is being used to compel her to take off the backpack?
Well, first, Your Honor, she was yanked off the bus, and a mere seconds later, it appears either the backpack falls or something, some force was used to bring the backpack lower
down her arm. Well, as your brief described it, she dropped the backpack. It sounds like you're backing away from what your brief said, and that's what's troubling me. All right?
I apologize, okay. Your Honor. The video, unfortunately, will speak for itself. It's too difficult to see in the video whether or not there was hands taking the backpack down to the floor, but either way, the backpack is put down on the floor. It is either dropped by force or dropped by falling off the arms. And, Your Honor, I can't say whether or not.
It seems like that's a pretty, like that is the heart of the case, at least as I understand, whether a robbery occurs. Unless you're saying that the law requires this temporal proximity between some force and the taking, but they don't have to be related.
Thank you for bringing that up, Your Honor. This particular court and the Minnesota Supreme Court have both discussed the time requirement and space requirement of what constitutes a robbery. And I agree a robbery is an assault plus a theft. But if you take appellant's arguments as true, then there is no such thing as a robbery. So in the cases that determine whether or not a robbery occurred, whether there was time or space in between both of those two types of crimes, in those cases, the courts do affirm that a robbery had taken place. For example, if the assault happens and then a taking happens, that can be a robbery. If there is an assault, then the assailant walks away, then comes back and takes something from that person, that's a robbery. Likewise, if a person takes something from a victim, punches the victim, then runs away, that is also a robbery. So the case law does contemplate factual situations where there is time and space between those two crimes, the assault and the theft. And again, they affirm the robbery in those cases.
But aren't those cases situations where the assailant physically takes the property away from the victim?
For example, out of their pockets. I do agree with that.
Right. So I think this goes to the point Judge Bryan raised in terms of one of the key issues here is whether the backpack was physically taken from her or if she, as you say in your brief, she dropped it. She relinquished it herself, left, and then somebody took that. I think that's a key distinction there in between the cases that you cite. I agree that there's that temporal difference there. Mm-hmm. But you still have a physical taking, which is the first one, which I'm not so sure that's there. I think the compelling the acquiescence, I'd be interested to hear more about that, but I don't know if we have enough to say that it was actual a physical taking.
Your Honor, if I may respond with a hypothetical.
Sure.
For example, let's say Ms. Bell, instead of the bag ending up on the ground, her cell phone falls out of her pocket and she runs away. And then Ms. Naidu picks up the cell phone and runs. That can't not be robbery. Just because something falls to the floor or something is dropped and that person has to run away to aid her partner as he's being severely beaten, that doesn't make that particular set of facts not a robbery. It's the same in this case with the bag on the floor. There's no way Ms. Naidu can claim...
But I think that would fall under the compelling acquiescence analysis, correct? Is that what you're arguing then? Because it's not a physical taking where the assault is happening and then the taking occurs almost simultaneously. I think that seems to be the first situation. What you're talking about in your hypothetical is where there's an assault. Because of that assault, property is lost, and so it's compelled acquiescence. It's something that the person did not give up willingly. They more or less lost because of the assault.
I agree with that, Your
okay.
Honor.
Okay. But how is that the same or similar to this situation where you have somebody who arguably just relinquished her backpack? She said, okay, I'm leaving. I'm actually leaving this here. How can that be a taking when somebody actually relinquishes something?
Your Honor, the facts in this case do not demonstrate that Ms. Bell dropped her bag for fun or because she just didn't want the bag or its contents anymore. That's not a reasonable inference from the facts here. She dropped the bag because she had some other purpose. And again, I say she dropped the bag. The bag ended up on the floor. And regardless of whether or not she put the bag on the floor, it doesn't mean that she was abandoning the property or relinquishing the property to Ms. Batchelor or Ms. Naidu. That's nonsensical. People drop their belongings all the time, and I don't see much difference between my hypothetical about the cell phone on the ground and the backpack on the ground. It still constitutes the fact sufficient to support Ms. Naidu's conviction for aiding and abetting aggravated robbery. I hope that answers Your Honor's questions. And in addition, Your Honors, it seems like there's some overlap in discussion about whether Ms. Naidu knew of or intended to aid the crimes in this particular case. And it's getting a little convoluted about principal and accomplice, but I do want to remind this court that the charges in this case did not regard conspiracy. Respondent does not argue that they all met beforehand and said, hey, look at these two people on the bus. This is our moment. Let's get together. Let's kick them in the neck and then beat them and grab their bag and put it in our stroller. No, that's not what respondent is arguing. Instead, this is aiding and abetting, which does not require some overt act. It does not require Ms. Naidu do everything, do a piece of every single element of the crime. Instead, she did not thwart it. She was an active participant. She's knocking hats off. She's waving her hands in people's face, throwing things at the victim's face in this instance. She stays around the brawl the entire time. She doesn't just exit on her own, go away, doesn't remain on the bus like other patrons. If Your Honors watch the entire video, other patrons remain seated on the bus
the
entire time.
I think one patron remains seated.
One gentleman?
Mm-hmm. That's what I saw. But anyway, I don't think that's
one.
Your point. So you're saying that we have a case where the state's theory against Ms. Naidu is that she actively participated in the melee, the brawl that led to the tumble out of the bus, right?
Correct.
And then she did withdraw, right? She goes to the back of the bus, she picks up her glasses, and she does exit after the brawl goes out to the sidewalk.
Immediately after.
Right.
There's another exit. She could have stayed on the bus. There's many other instances.
Well, her glasses were near the front of the bus, so she exited out the front of the bus. And that's when she picks up the backpack, and that's based on her testimony.
Correct. And right. If you watch the surveillance video of out of the front door of the bus, you can see that Ms. Batchelor is beating Ms. Bell in the head. Ms. Naidu is sort of in the background-ish area of that, off to the left, if I'm picturing it in my head. She is present, seeing Ms. Batchelor beat and yank on Ms. Bell's hair. She sees the backpack on Ms. Bell this entire time.
I mean, she was never asked those questions, what she saw. I don't believe Ms. Naidu was asked those questions about what she saw at that particular time. You can infer it from looking at the videotape, and that's fine. I'd like to ask you a little bit about the assault of... our male victim, and I'm sorry, I apologize, I'm forgetting
his
name.
Mr. Villanueva.
Yes, thank you, Villanueva. So, going to your brief, you don't cite any testimony that establishes that Ms. Nadeau ever hit Mr. Villanueva, right?
If I don't, I apologize, but there is testimony in the video does show that she does make contact with Mr.
I've certainly heard that reference multiple times that the video shows it, but what about testimony? Is there any testimony? Because I think Mr. Villanueva was asked that extensively, and he kept saying, I don't know who hit me. I don't know who hit me. I was hit by multiple people. That's my shorthand summary of his testimony, and you can go ahead and correct me if I'm wrong.
Your Honor, I don't have the transcript right in front of me, but in my review of the facts, it appears that there's a first few hits where Ms. Nadeau tries to either punch or hit Ms. Bell, and because of Ms. Bell's close proximity to Mr. Villanueva, his hat gets hit off or something. Some contact happens between Ms. Nadeau and Mr. Villanueva. And then after that, there seems to be some sort of...
I guess what I'm trying to understand is what's the connection between... saying this is your case, right? This is the best evidence the state offers, between Ms. Nadeau knocking off Mr. Villanueva's hat and this ultimate injury, the assault, the substantial bodily harm.
And in my review of the facts, it looks like there is an escalation in the fight, and this happens after Ms. Nadeau puts her hands sort of near around the two victims' faces. So DB, the juvenile in this case, hoists himself up, kicks Mr. Villanueva in the neck, the face area. At that same time, instantly, the other male in the fight Mr. Billups tries to punch Mr. Villanueva in the face. And right after that, you see again Ms. Nadeau put her hands in the fight as well.
Isn't there a moment where Ms. Bell engages with Mr. Billups
immediately
before Ms. Nadeau engages with Ms. Bell?
I don't recall that, Your Honor. I am happy to review the record again.
All right, sorry, I didn't interrupt you. Go ahead.
In addition to the video, I can send a letter of clarification. But there is contact in between the time where the two gentlemen engage and Ms. Nadeau.
And what does that prove? Help just connect the dots for me in terms of establishing the accomplice liability of Ms. Nadeau.
Well, to take a step back, Your Honor, I only have 30 seconds left. But
I understand.
May take a few more seconds. With regard to the assault, again, it gets down to whether or not the evidence is sufficient to show Ms. Nadeau both knew that there was a third-degree assault either happening or had happened from all of the co-defendants in this case, and whether she intended her actions to further that criminal activity. And the evidence is more than sufficient to show that, Your Honor. In evaluating the facts of this case, you have to look at Ms. Nadeau's activity before, during, and after the brawl. And before the brawl, she is sitting with these people in the middle of the bus. She clearly knows Ms. Batchelor because she took it upon herself to remove Ms. Batchelor's child before the fight. And that fact also indicates she knows a fight is about to go down on this bus. Then you look at what happens. She re-enters the bus. She comes right behind her friends during this activity. She throws something at the victims. Her hands are in the victims' faces. She doesn't leave or remain on the bus while the fight leaves. And then she takes the backpack. It's unreasonable to assume that this defendant, Ms. Nadeau, didn't know that it was Ms. Bell's backpack. And then you also look at the conduct after the fight. Everybody flees. Ms. Nadeau and Ms. Batchelor enter some other bus. The two male defendants run off to a building somewhere. But Ms. Nadeau stays with Ms. Batchelor the whole time and freely talks to the police in a post-Miranda statement, says she knows Ms. Batchelor. She knows her from various outings. They are in a group together.
And it's probably time for you to wrap
it's
up now.
Probably Thank time. You, Counsel. But again... Respondent to the state of Minnesota does ask that this court affirm the convictions. There is sufficient evidence to support the convictions. And thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
I'd like to go back to the robbery because it is the most important conviction before the court. If there is a fight among multiple persons and one of the victims in that fight drops a cell phone accidentally and somebody picks the phone up, that is not a robbery. And it is telling that the state has offered that hypothetical to show why this case is a robbery. It isn't. And that's exactly or similarly what happened here.
But why wouldn't that be a robbery if somebody takes somebody else's property when there's an altercation going on and that the loss of that property is a result of that altercation?
Well, Your Honor, we could write a robbery statute that says that. That says if force results in the loss of property, we could do that. The legislature could do that. That's not what they did.
Isn't that really compelling acquiescence?
Well, no. If somebody accidentally dropped their phone, nobody caused that acquiescence.
Well, but what in the hypothetical, that dropping of the phone is caused by the assault.
But that's not what the statute said. It doesn't say causation. It says compelling acquiescence. If I purposely want to get your property and I use force to get your property and then take it, that's a robbery. Notably, again, because language is important, the way respondent and the way the prosecutor at trial described the taking is as opportunistic, as exploiting an opportunity. Again, that doesn't sound like a robbery.
What about the time? And do you make anything of, obviously, Caval has this language about preceding or accompanying, but it's not accompanying in Caval, it's more preceding in Caval, if you look at the facts, so maybe accompanying is a somehow part dicta. But the argument that the temporal proximity is enough. Yes, the statute says use force to do something, but if you've got 5 seconds from when she's forcibly removed from the bus until we don't know exactly when the backpack was picked up, but we do know 5 seconds transpire from being removed to the directive get our or get her stuff.
Sure.
What do you make of just a 5 second break between those two actions? Is that somehow sufficient for the statute or not?
I would say it's insufficient, Your Honor. And to sort of build on what we all talked about before, you can disagree with me entirely that you can't take two people's acts together and make them into a robbery, and I can still win, right? Because we still need someone to commit the forcible taking. The problem isn't necessarily that it's 5 seconds versus one or versus 30 seconds. It's that no person, even if we combine actions, used force for the purpose stated in the robbery statute. Certainly Ms. Nadeau didn't. She's not using force to get property. She opportunistically takes it from the ground where it's been abandoned. There's no evidence that Ms. Batchelor was using force, which she certainly was, to get property. She's just engaging in a terrible beating of this woman.
So the fact that she's dropping the bag to help the other person, Mr. Villanueva, has nothing to do, as part of this whole altercation, that's not compelling acquiescence because of the fact that she's trying to actually help the other person that's being assaulted as well?
No, I think that supports our position, Your Honor.
Why?
It shows that she did indeed drop her bag. She abandoned it on the ground. And the state repeatedly
I think what Judge Reyes's question is getting at, and I'm curious about it as well, is if and it certainly is visible on the videotape at the approximately the same time that Ms. Bell is dropping her backpack under the tree, we have the Mr. Villanueva and the other gentleman going, roughly in front of the bus, and they are all wailing on each other quite extensively. So if Ms. Bell is dropping the backpack to go to his assistance, isn't the force that's being used on Mr. Villanueva essentially compelling her? I think that's the argument the state is making, and I just would like to hear, I think I know your response, but I'd like to hear your response.
Absolutely, Your Honor. So again, even if you disagree with me that you don't need a principal who commits all the elements, there's nothing in the robbery statute, or I would submit the robbery case law, that says force against a different person, but against person A, and the taking of person B's property is a single robbery. I don't think there's any law to support that. Even if this court finds, and I think you could on the facts, respondent lists as a circumstance.
Well, force
proved
against a different person can be perceived of as a threat. It also can be arguably is a way of compelling someone to do something. And that's my question. Is the force that they're using against Mr. Villanueva, and they, I'm referring to this group that's engaged in the assault, the melee,
yes,
is that effectively forcing Ms. Bell to do what she did?
No, and I would say, Your Honor, because there's no evidence in this record, and at least there's a reasonable inference against it, that the ongoing brutal fight had anything to do with property. It's just a fight. It's a fight to hurt people. It's not a fight in order to get property.
Well, actually, wasn't the wallet part of the impetus for the fight as an initial matter?
The unknown person's wallet that may or may not have been there?
Yes.
Yes. I mean, there's no allegation that it was a victim's wallet, to be clear.
Correct. Yes. Yes. It was an unknown person that...
Yeah. Yes. I see my time has expired. I would ask this court to reverse Ms. Nadeau's convictions. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you. Our thanks to both counsel in this case. The matter was very well briefed and well argued. It's now submitted to this court for its decision, and we will issue a written decision within the statutory time frame. Thank you very much.